Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. Today, to help me unpack a lot of cricket that's been going on in the last week or so, I have a returning guest to the show. Hello, Manjunath. Welcome to the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hi, Ajit. Always a pleasure to be on your podcast. And a lot of, again, looking forward to some really good discussion. So thank you for having me.
No worries. So the question is, why do I not hear much of your own podcast, the Heads and Tails podcast, right?
Yeah. Actually, we have not done many episodes of late. So, mostly from my side only, I've been a little more busy. So, we have to plan something. Yeah.
I hope you guys find some time and back on the bandwagon again, because it was enjoyable to listen to you guys discuss as well. So, let's head straight into the games at hand. Did you watch that amazing finish, England and New Zealand?
Yes. What happened was I was looking at the Cricinfo scores, and suddenly I thought that there is some problem or a glitch in the scorecard, and there was like almost 42 runs came in 3 overs. Then I watched it till the end. So I actually missed the definitive, you know, the actual part where the match turned after tea. So.
No, but if you saw it at 42 runs after 3 overs, I think you still caught it. I think they scored 100 runs in the first 8 overs after tea, right? So you still caught the brunt of the assault.
Yeah, they scored, yeah. Phenomenal.
What an innings.
Yeah. Right. So at that time, I had just, after seeing the 42 runs, I had just updated that, you know, get ready or something like that. But I never knew it'll actually, I thought they'll lose a wicket or two. Again, they'll slow down like the old time test matches. But it doesn't work like that. I think the spirit of Gavaskar and all will be happy after the 1979 game. So I think he'll be happy listening to this match that they were able to finish it finally. So,
is this the approach for test matches going forward? Even 280, 300 is not going to be safe on the last day?
So now that depends on how the game is played. Definitely it is changing with the franchise T20. But what it does is actually it ruins the fun a bit. Like if you see, at least there should be one format where the bowler has the upper hand. So like it shouldn't be also that flat. Yeah, once in a while such a game is okay. But overall for the health of test cricket is not good. I know I may sound a little skeptical or a little old fashioned, but then I would rather see that Ashwin and Hanuma Vihari kind of a defense and save the game. That gives a little more thrill for me. But maybe for someone who is not a junctional millennial or born after 2000. So for them, maybe this is more enjoyable. So if that's the way forward, so be it.
Frankly, there are two sides of the same coin for me, right? So you have the old fashioned values where you'll say over my dead body defending, where you don't even need to change strikes. You're just sitting at one end and you're blocking through, seeing a session and session and a half. That's like rear guard. This was like a march to victory. It was not a rear guard trying to save face or anything. No. So with the amount of cricket they play and the kind of cricket they've played, I think Johnny Bairstow just coming back of IPL, right? He has the touch. And Ben Stokes, look, he's always going to be an aggressive cricketer in most conditions. The combination for me, that was perfect. So neither held back, but what an assault. Look, Johnny Bairstow went in 43 or 48. And then I actually missed the first 5 hours of that assault. Then I'm turning it on, like 59, 60 runs have been scored in 5 hours. I'm like, wow, this is well and truly on. Right? I remember tweeting at T saying they need 137 and it's going to be interesting. I mean, in the first half an hour or 40 minutes, I think they closed the game out. Just the way the amount of runs that were made, the result was never in doubt.
The opposition was just, they were blown away. Like literally, they didn't have any plans, any ideas. Like they didn't even try to like, you know, maybe take some time, all those things. Like just they were caught, like they were caught in the, with their pants down literally. Can't blame them much for that.
Well, how much did they miss Jamieson, who missed out? He was out injured, right? He couldn't bowl.
They are not like they have that control. I think they missed Wagner more. Like that's what I feel. Yeah, many people bring it up that whichever test Wagner didn't play, they are not playing well. But Neil Wagner is someone who's like, you know, last year he was bowling with a foot fracture at full tilt, you know, and he's like relentless line, and he has perfected that art of you know, defensive bowling, which is culminating into wickets, and even aggressive mixed with aggression with the bouncers. So that is something which is missing. So if you have guys who are going to, you know that they are going to be more or less full or like 8 meters, 10 meters mark, then people like Bairstow are going to play through the line. Of course, they are good from the short bowling also. But then this is bound to happen. Like if Wagner is there in the attack, then one end can definitely be better controlled. So I know it's asking too much. He is with 36 right now. And how long can he go on like this relentless attack? We don't know. But fit Neil Wagner actually completes this attack, like, apart from Jamieson also. So, like even Jamieson with the batting, he even lengthens the lineup better. So, there are some factors like this world championship team, which is there. There are some chinks in it. So, from the Bangladesh loss and then this loss, you can find out that they are not infallible. But all teams have some weaknesses.
That's a bit of a generic thing to say. But if I come to specifics, this is the most number of runs scored in a Trent Bridge test ever. Okay, and they've played like 100 years of tests there. Also, if you look at the rate at which the runs were scored and the wickets that fell, there was enough of a balance. So for the first 3.5 days, you had a lot of runs scored, but both sides made 500 plus. But then what was the difference for me was the third innings, the approach from England. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the run rate was very healthy throughout the test match. So there was an urgency. So it almost reminded of the Australia of the 2000s. Like they were going at a very 3.5 and above. So it was like they bought themselves the time to pull off this chase. So although it is like there is a risk of getting bowled out cheaply. But, you know, England, even if they collapse, it's like one more collapse. But this is a phenomenal effort. So definitely for the approach, you have to laud them. So still with the help of a New Zealander, but well done to them. So it cannot happen each time. So, but still, whenever the things are in their favor, they have capitalized. So they have been a good side in that.
So then comes the question, the New Zealand factor, you already brought it up. The coach is now a New Zealander who's like never take a step back sort of a guy. The captain is a New Zealander who's exactly the same sort of an attitude guy.
Right.
Do you think this is the change in approach and attitude? Is this the New England? Do you think this will continue for longer?
Yeah, so now it depends on how their equations are. So like now they are just forming and he might have, definitely they would know him from other cricket and as a player. So, but as a coach, we really don't know what goes on behind the scenes. But from his attitude, like the, a few of his press interactions and everything, he is definitely an assertive character. So what I feel is it will help the captain, it will take the limelight away from him. So always like someone who's Ben Stokes, who's always in the limelight. I think McCullum can definitely, you know, absorb some of the pressure that way. So far in all his media interactions, he's been fine. And now the thing to be seen is after a few losses also, we have to see whether that same the same resolve remains or no. So that is the thing. So with the ups and downs. So if looking at this performance, like there is definitely a there are some shades of like maybe a Justin Langer kind of tenure may be loading for England. So but it may be too early to say because they keep changing coaches, like you never know what is going on. But definitely these are good signs for them. And maybe Joe Root, the batsman, may truly arrive after in this tenure.
It remains to be seen. For me, there was a marked improvement in the attitude in both the last 2 days of the first as well as the second test. I think that's what gave them the victory more than anything. It's the approach and the attitude of England. I would dare say this attitude is also sort of a combined product of the captain's mentality as well as the coach's inputs, I'm sure. So you're absolutely right when you say we have to wait and see how they respond when some things go against them. Maybe a small period of reversals. Let's see how they respond. Right. But as a test match fan, I'm really happy to see the way they're batting and they're attacking, the fields that are set, the bowlers, the freedom that's given. Everything is very refreshing. When it comes to, well, New Zealand, what's happening? They would be really disappointed, gutted, right? The way they batted in the both the tests, frankly, and then to lose both of them. The first test to a gem of 100 by Joe Root, then second test to gem of 100 by Bairstow. And having made so many runs in the second test, 190 and 100 again. Yeah. And well, it was a flat day, to be said. But there's enough that bowlers, if you bowl dry for a period, you could still get wickets, right? And as you say, they were really stunned, I'm sure, by that assault. But maybe if Kane Williamson was on the field, you think things could have been different?
Yeah, definitely. Kane Williamson will spend time in the middle. So whatever he does, he is the vital person around which the batting revolves. So definitely his absence is going to hurt the team. And even if you keep two third mans, he will play a few dot balls, but he will get a start. That is the thing. So in both the innings, like you found that they were four down for not much in both the test matches. And then you had Mitchell and Blundell rescue them to a certain level, then even go ahead in the game. So that is one problem which they are having. Like they have a few like glitches in top order, like people who bat long. So that should be there. Earlier, they had Mark Richardson over the years. So he used to be that stoic person holding up one end. So currently they are in need of one more like that. So now the only thing is left to see is among these top four, who is the one who can give them these kind of innings to wear out the new ball so that Williamson can have it a little better. So otherwise, mostly it's like nothing for one, nothing for two, and he's always there to face the new ball. So eternally under pressure. So that is the problem with their lineup.
Yeah, that could be a good one when it comes to Kane Williamson, the batter. What about Kane Williamson, the skipper? The skipper who could have been on the ground when, you know, all this assault unfolded on the last day.
So his inputs will definitely make a difference. But then, like, even if you see, Latham is not a bad like tactician in that way. But at times, you may find that he's a little bit one-dimensional. He may be continuing with the same fields for a long time. There was no like radical change or any attempt to, you know, change the momentum or something. So that you can definitely, if you in hindsight, you can accuse him of being a little bit one-dimensional and trying to follow the ball, follow the game and such like that. But again, obviously, we all know that Kane will be back. So eventually, Kane era will resume. I think normal services should resume. But definitely, they need someone else to take over in the absence of Kane.
Well, I mean, as you say, Latham also has his own learning curve as a skipper. Maybe he's a good tactician, but some things you have to learn with how it works with the specific team, right? So, and specific set of bowlers' conditions. So, it's probably a smattering of bad decisions when it comes to field placements and so on. And he missed a key bowler as well. It was all in all a wonderful test, like back-to-back wonderful tests in the series. It augurs really well for England, the new era, so to say. But also another question when it comes to batsmen. So if you see the three other batters in the Fab Four, Kohli has had a quiet period over the last 18 months or so. Yeah. Stephen Smith as well and Kane Williamson as well. The only guy who's actually gone from strength to strength was in fact out of the Fab Four and has come back in, roaring in fact, probably the top position in the Fab Four now, Joe Root. What has changed in the last 18 months or so? Can you put your finger on that?
It's actually really hard to explain. Maybe a few subtle changes in technique, possibly, but actually he has been, when he came to India, one thing I noticed was he was very much strong off his back foot. And anything under the eyes, he was really good in playing. So probably like it's like trusting the bounce, allowing the ball to come to him. So maybe in a little bit batter friendly conditions, you know, he can just run away with it. But if you go back to like the 2019 Ashes, like he was falling over a bit and he got bowled by Pat Cummins in that time, like bowled or caught behind. So definitely he has adjusted a few trigger movements and all. And right now, like he has a little bit very simple free flowing approach. So like there is not much jitteriness. There is just a simple back and across movement and he's meeting the ball like under his eyes. And I think the confidence also has a lot to do with it. Like getting that first boundary away, it comes very early. Within the first 10-20 balls, he's got a few stunning drives away or a really good back foot punch. And that also just builds with the confidence. So he's not searching for the ball actually. It's following him. It seems like that. So maybe it's a mind space too, along with the technique. So that's what I feel.
This augurs really well for England. He has a couple of good seasons left, no doubt.
It augurs well for tests also, because the other three guys may look at this, you know, 2,300 odd runs in the one year, where they are like next to barely scored 100 in between them, that is scored by Kane. So that is something which is going to stimulate them to do better. So I don't know. I hope like in the Edgbaston test, Kohli comes out blazing.
I mean, if anything, if you are a Kohli fan, you might just hope that, you know, the same sort of a rejuvenation, same sort of a, you know, rise might still occur in Kohli's career. We really hope so. All right. From on that test to another test where, just as a counterpoint, right? Look at what happens when the bowlers are too much on top of proceedings. Bangladesh 103 all out. Thanks to 150, they got to 103. Otherwise, they would have been like 70 all out, maybe. Now in the second innings, they are so far behind, at least 159 for 3, they have a chance, I would say. But another 100 runs or so, they're out of the game for me. 150 lead is very difficult to reverse, right? Even history shows us that. What could be plaguing this Bangladesh team? So Tamim is not scoring. Mominul is completely quiet as a batter. The other batsman used to make a bit of runs. There is no Mushfiq in this tour because he's chosen to take a holiday from his personal perspective. So Litton Das has to make runs. So Nurul Hasan made a few runs. But what is the next step for this Bangladesh team? What could be ailing them, do you think?
So the traditional problem with Bangladeshis has been patience. Like if you go online and search for Ramiz Raja and his interaction, so they are always thin on patience. If you see like look at the cricket fans, like somewhat we feel like how the Indian cricket fans were in 96, the Bangladeshi fans are like that. They're growing restless, and the team has only a partial contribution in that. And probably they just need a little more patience. And you know, they showed plenty of that in New Zealand when they won that test. You had Joy and Shanto really playing well. So they need somebody to, you know, at least motivate them and go back to that that mind space where everyone was really batting well. Litton is suddenly is not on song that much. But as a batting unit, if they spend a little more time, bat for time, they will definitely, they can produce these big scores, better performances. But traditionally, they are a little bit thin on patience. I think we need to work on that. I really don't know how, but I hope they do it. I would love to, you know, see Litton facing 200 balls in a game and, you know, really being not out, going inside.
I think he does it. I'd rather somebody in the top four does it. Yeah, I'd exactly. rather Mominul yeah, does yeah. it. Tamim does yeah. it. Because Litton is already sort of fighting a rear guard where he comes.
Yeah, lone battle. Yes.
As things stand, West Indies have a lead of 56 runs and they have 7 wickets standing. And that's by the by okay. But when you look at what it can mean in terms of the whole game, well, it'll really be the next 50 overs or so of the game, whether Bangladesh can get West Indies all out with a lead of under 100, maybe just over 100, and then come back really strong. Otherwise, this test is lost. Because we remember previously, they had the same sort of an issue when they visited West Indies. And they used to make very small totals in the first innings, put themselves so far back that they couldn't come back into the test. So let's see if they have learned their lesson here. Moving on, Well, there is this ODI, I think not very far from my house, where Netherlands are taking on England. And unfortunately, England have, if you are a Netherlands fan, they've made a 498 for four in the first innings. And in the second innings, in 36 and a half overs, Netherlands are 181 for six. So do you think England will enforce the follow-on?
Well, actually, I always liked Netherlands as a team. I first saw them in the 96 World Cup. So there were a few very interesting characters. Like, of course, the grand old man Nolan Clark walked out at that time. And later on, I really liked them in 2009 when they won that match in the T20 World Cup. So definitely, apart from Ireland and now Afghanistan has come up recently. But I always expect Netherlands to fight, because there have been traditionally these very not so talented, but definitely very enterprising cricketers. And of course, there has been Tendo has been there. Van der Merwe was there. So definitely now currently Max O'Dowd is their one of their good prospects. Like, so if he fires, then they always have a good chance of at least fighting. So I really hope that, you know, like at least there should be some challenge from the associate nations. Otherwise, it will just become a three-way affair. That is not good. So I don't know. The ICC may not be committed, but as fans, we are committed to seeing associate nations do well. So it always gives us happiness.
Absolutely. Look, I'm a fan of Netherlands cricket as well. But the problem is there is a huge difference in skill set and also in terms of what they achieve. Netherlands are missing four first choice bowlers. They're all playing in the county cricket where they're playing the T20 tournament in England. They can't completely rely on Netherlands cricket to give them that sort of a living. So they have to rely on other formats of incumbent. That means sometimes their time gets divided. So Peter Saylor, the skipper, complained about it. But it's a losing battle for him always. So they're able to do the best what they can. Their top order is very young. Their openers are doing good, must be said. I had gone to one ODI. So it was a decent game, but West Indies was still too strong. But when you look at the rest of the summer, I'm rather a bit worried, because against England, Pakistan and New Zealand, the divide between the top 10 teams and the rest of who are recently associates or who are now just ODI teams, it might come through in a bad way. So this is something I really hope even the administrators that they take a slightly different approach to how games are organized. So and so on. So this is a long rant. So just to finish off the Netherlands part of the, you know, the podcast, I have actually played against Steven Lubbers last year, the captain of the 1996 Netherlands World Cup. He's still playing club cricket for a club called Salland.
That's nice.
I mean, what a man. Really. A really, really tough man. Hard man. He's probably in his 60s. And if you listen to him command the fielders, the way he sets up the field, sets up bowling changes. This is a man you see was a captain. And he is a captain. And, oh, you don't want to get on the wrong side of him. This is what I realized. But nice man after the game with a drink in hand.
Associates, one real good example which I can give for associate fans. Like, if you see the 2003 World Cup where Kenya went into the semi-final. So you saw Asif Karim bowl his last spell and going at an economy of like 3 or 4. And then Steve Buckner gives him his cap and like, you know, so it's very sad and very and also happy in a way. But it shows the struggle, like how much struggle is there in the as an associate country to, you know, come up represent in the World Cup. You know, it's like really a very big gulf is there. So I think the faster that gulf is plugged, the better, because the more the merrier as far as sport is concerned. It should be more inclusive. So always we feel that, you know, when there are associates like. You can take even this Trumpelman, who is a South African, then he gets a visa for Namibia and then goes and plays for Namibia, performs well. Yeah. Or there's Erasmus with jersey number 7, Namibia's Dhoni finishing games. So, yeah. So it feels good, actually. So you want more such unknown names to become household names, because that is how it works. You know, that is how it inspires. So really, I wish them well. I hope Netherlands do well in their upcoming exploits.
Absolutely. Before we go into other games, well, we should also have a quick word about the Afghanistan-Zimbabwe games. Well, again, there the gulf was quite obvious, where, you know, Zimbabwe could not chase 170 made by Afghanistan. That's understandable because they have a very strong bowling lineup. But in the last game, the third T20I, well, Afghanistan even defended 125. That's how good their bowling is, right? There's such a vast experience gap. Fazal Haq Farooqi played IPL. You have Rashid Khan. You have all of these amazing bowlers. Even skipper who's skippering this tournament, Nabi, he didn't even bowl in the last game. Without him, they completely kept Zimbabwe to 90 for 9 in the 20 overs. So I also love the approach from the Afghanistan team, that it's a completely never say die approach. You see big things for them as far as Asian cricket is concerned?
Yeah, if you see, the corner was turned in one series against Bangladesh, where, you know, there is a game where they need 3 runs to win from the last ball, or 2 runs to win. And it is hit to Rashid Khan at the long on boundary. And one rocket throw and the batters run out, they lost by 1 run. So like that kind of spirit, this spirit definitely, you know, Afghanistan has come up in leaps and bounds. So their hunger to do well, it just keeps growing with each game. And also it helps to have BCCI as a friend and give them, like they have been well hosted at Ekana Stadium and they've got the good facilities. They have top flight players playing in the leagues. Those factors there, but they have utilized it well. So even if you take their only test also, they did, you know, initially they were very overwhelmed by the situation, but they then they came about. So I think for them, things are looking bright for them.
Absolutely. So, I mean, for me, the next step in their growth is to play in the SENA countries, but one step at a time. They're doing really well. Yeah. And they'll also measure up to that challenge.
And you actually, we can't help but feel bad for Zimbabwe. There was a time when heat streak and our chicken farmer Edo Brandis were running through lineups for fun. And they had Paul Strang and that attack. And currently now it's a little bit dry, the cupboard. But soon, you know, there was Sikandar Raza fighting a lone battle in the qualifiers. But after that, not much has come out of Zimbabwe. Hopefully, there are a few. There was a Blessing Muzaraban, who was selected for the IPL. He was selected for the IPL, but I was looking forward for him to get some chance, but unfortunately missed out. So hopefully we'll see in the coming games. Now with 10 teams, I think definitely someone like Muzarabani will have a market and also teams wanting to take him.
All right. Indeed. So we really wish Zimbabwe all the best in the upcoming days as well. Moving on, if you were to take a look at the ongoing South Africa versus India T20I series. Manju, have you been able to follow this?
Yeah, I've been watching the games quite a bit.
Well, when you look at the second to the third T20I, you saw there's a difference in approach from the Indian team. What do you think could be the reason for this?
Yeah, mainly like today, what I felt really happy was during the Hardik and Karthik partnership. So two good friends on and off the field. There were a lot of touch boundaries which were scored. So like it took me back to the older ways where, you know, you need not muscle it over the boundary. You can even have a touch play and find some very fierce square cuts were hit, a few good flicks. So it was really pleasing to the eye. So I would rather enjoy a combination of big hits and also these shots. So still they were able to get to a very good score. So later on, like, it seemed to be more than enough for them. So I don't know. I still feel that, you know, totally ditching this approach and going with the England way is also, it may not suit our side. So still the jury is out on what kind of approach to have. So usually we are sedate starters and then we catch up. So, but then how much is sedate and how long is too long is what the batsman in the middle has to decide. Right?
Look, I was actually referring to second and the third ODIs, T20Is, but doesn't matter. You're probably discussing about the fourth one, which finished just now before we started recording. So in all, if you go back, look, the second T20I, it was sort of, again, India was struggling to get the right, let's say, runs going. It was a sticky pitch. 148 that they made was never going to be easy. But one fantastic innings from Henrik Claassen saw the game through. And I thought the Indian spinners were not particularly good. I mean, you would expect a bit more on this pitch from the likes of Akshar Patel and Yashwendra Chahal, but they both went for a lot of runs. On this pitch, I thought it had to be the spinners because Bhuvneshwar Kumar bowled really well. 4 for 13. You don't fault the fast bowlers. They were okay. Avesh Khan did not give too many runs away. And same for Harshal Patel. And you saw Hardik Pandya was costly, but then all that came down to was how the spinners bowled. And kudos to Henrik Claassen. He won them the game. When it comes to the third one, you see that there is already a change in attitude. What you said, they built big thanks to like big partnership right at the top. Your top one and two made 50s. Even though they couldn't close out as fast or as well as they would have liked, 179 was still going to be too much on that pitch. And that's how it turned out. Claassen made another 29. But the spinners came to the party, and Harshal Patel, I thought, was wonderful, 4-25. Yashwendra Chahal, 3-20. So for me, the difference between the second and the third T20I was the bowling of the spinners. And see, Bhuvneshwar Kumar has been good throughout. Harshal Patel is always a growing cricketer, and he's showing that to us. So he usually starts a series slow. First game, second game, he's not good, but he comes good. That's what we saw also in T20s, the IPL, and so on. So that brings us to today's game. So India didn't start particularly well because they were like 56-3, I remember, at the 10-over mark when I stopped watching the game. So I was pleasantly surprised to see they had gone to 169-6 and Dinesh Karthik had scored a 50. So we will have a couple of points to discuss. Is this opening top three good enough? Are they good enough to be the future of Indian T20 cricket, do you think? Rituraj Gaikwad, Ishan Kishan, Shreyas Iyer.
Yeah, so right now, the thing is that we have a major tournament coming up very close. So I wouldn't like to give more players into the mix and, you know, confuse them. So the best thing is from the team management is it should be clear that these people will be in if the big guns are not ready by the time. So they have to be ready to come in and fill the slot. So if they are like that, accordingly, they can prepare and get into the correct mindset to fulfill this role. But then again, if you like for what happened with Raidu, like, sorry to be going back to the same thing, but like Raidu was told that, you know, there were press conferences that he's the number four. And then there is a 3D man walks into the scene. So that sends a very wrong message. So I really hope that, you know, with Dravid in the center, I really hope that there is a clear message to them so that they can also pick up the game. Maybe Shreyas can improve against the short ball. Like today we saw DK hitting the spinners. So that way, it always works. Like, knowing your role definitely helps. And using Dinesh Karthik as a prime example, definitely the top order can be groomed to perform for us in the World Cup in the future. So I think it is time to look beyond Rohit Sharma and Rahul for the long term, because we know what they are capable of, but we need these people to do well because they have much time on their hands. And there is scope for them to really excel in this format. So like free-flowing style of play.
For me, the person who I would, or the people I would like to look beyond are probably Rohit Sharma and Kohli. Rahul, a fit Rahul, would still come into this 11 for me. He would be the banker around whom you could have all your stroke makers go. So he's an ideal number three, number four for me. You would think he should be given the most number of balls to play, but I don't generally agree with that. I would give him 30-40 balls and have him score 40-50 runs in that. And then you have the likes of Pant, Iyer, Pandya and Karthik who can blast, who can really hit out around him. So the question really comes is the top two for me, about basically top two to three, where you'd say Kohli, if he bats at three, you would have Rohit Sharma. So Rohit Sharma also has his struggles with fitness sometimes, right? And even now he's injured. Well, if you hear about what's coming, we hear rumors that Rohit Sharma is not going to be able to tour the England for the test, one test. KL Rahul himself might be out of this. So how do you see India faring in this tour of England when it comes to the single test that they play?
It's going to be tough because one thing is, it's one thing to play a tour, but it's another thing to like go for a one-off test. So always like one-off tests are a little bit dicey. Like what happened at the WTC final, if you would see, that is also a fair idea what happens in such one-off encounters. Sometimes you are not well prepared, not well acclimatized. So it can go horribly long. So we can only hope that we find good backup and probably like someone like Abhimanyu Ishwaran or someone could get his chance. So we don't know.
How about Prithvi Shaw or Gaikwad in the longer format?
Yeah, so Prithvi Shaw and Gaikwad definitely worth a go in the long format. And considering that Prithvi Shaw was there in the Australian tour, despite a few unfortunate first over dismissals and edging onto the stumps. So I think the technical flaws apart, he is someone who can definitely run away with the game. So I don't think we should be too skeptical about him. And And provided he doesn't have his cough syrup and stuff and doesn't get into trouble, I think he should make it. So I also really want Prithvi Shaw to do well. He has a good range and he's the one fellow who reminds me of the Sehwag era. So like, I don't know, as a nostalgic person, I always feel that if we have that one guy to give that impetus, then the match will take a different turn.
You can never underestimate the effect of a hard-hitting opener who can actually change the game in a matter of 5, 8, 10 overs, even in a test match, right? But for me, there's also another name, Shubman Gill. So, look, they're all the future of Indian cricket. Maybe Shubman Gill might fit in at 3 better than at in the top. But it remains to be seen. But for me, we are not yet ready to move on from Rohit and Kohli in the longer format. But in the shorter formats, in the shortest format, I would say, it might make sense to, you know, persuade both of them to, you know, not really stretch themselves. Let me put it that way, right? Let them focus on the upcoming 2023 World Cup. See, the three big players, the three big batsmen at their time, 2007 did it. Tendulkar, Ganguly and Dravid. They decided to step aside and a young team led by a young skipper went on and took the trophy. We've not been able to replicate it since. Why not try that again? I know it's very un-Indian to expect to have different skippers for different squads and have a completely different guy leading the T20 team when you have a guy different guy leading the test in the ODIs or even at least ODIs when it comes to Rohit Sharma, right? The way I look at it, Rohit Sharma's career is slowly winding down. He may actually not last a whole lot beyond the next year's 2023 World Cup. I even hope he makes it to the World Cup because he has his fitness issues.
I have a slightly different vision for Rohit Sharma. So, I don't know, people will criticize me for that or they may, few may agree, I don't know. But I don't know, maybe if his career does wind down, I would rather, you know, have him come out for Mumbai and play like a Darren Stevens. But is that possible in Ranji? I don't know. Because India is a very competitive country and there are a lot of competition for Ranji slots. But I don't know, Rohit Sharma is that kind of guy, like, you know, 3 a.m. also he can come hit one pull shot for 6. In hole out in the same type of shot and go out. So definitely this era of aesthetically pleasing players might end with the hard clubbing, you know, Fred Flintstone kind of Bairstow and Stokes kind of a play. So I don't know. I still feel this touch play should not go totally out of vogue.
It won't.
So
it won't.
The touch timing, yeah. So that guy. So another guy who's slid away is like Zubair Hamza had come for South Africa. Initially, he looked really very technically correct and all. So he's also one of those guys, very pleasing on the eye, good to watch.
Well, Hamza has not faded away. He's put himself in trouble and he's banned for a year for taking something he shouldn't have. Another air quotes cough syrup. Right. Yeah. So where I'm going is simple, right, Manju? So for me, let the youngsters take over the team in the T20. Let them have an experienced coach. Let the older generation, the golden generation who's currently, you know, the ruling the roost, let them go to the ODI World Cup, see if they can win and take India to the World Test Championship finals again. Make a chance to actually win the World Test Championship final in the ODI World Cup if possible. Let the youngsters go to the T20 World Cup, see if they can get it home. Right? It was, after all, a very adventurous keeper batsman who took over the captaincy and took India to a World Cup, right? T20 World Cup. So let's see if that's possible.
Definitely.
Well, before we move on, I think we should also wrap up the game. So in this game, the bowlers really stood up. So Avesh Khan really showed us how special he is. He took a 4-4 and completely wrapped up South Africa in that 87. It looks like this is their lowest score. They had no scores greater than 20. 20 was Rasif Ander Dusan. So also he had fantastic control. Again, Bhuneshwar Kumar, 2 overs, 8. Right. And interestingly, Hardik Pandya was given the new ball ahead of Avesh Khan. And Avesh Khan was used as a first change bowler and he succeeded 4-for-18. So going forward, I think he has a role for India. And I dare say in all formats, Avesh Khan, I see as a potential successor to somebody like Mohammad Shami. The same hard lengths, he bowls those hard lengths and he's a strong lad. I see him as a potential successor to the likes of Mohammad Shami, where you would see somebody like Siraj take over from Ishan Sharma. And so on. So, he has a role also for me in all formats.
Yeah. So, two names. One is, there is Avesh Khan. And one is Prasidh Krishna.
Absolutely.
So, Prasidh Krishna is like our Karnataka's Joel Garner prototype.
Right.
So, I know, but it is an unfair comparison because Joel Garner is more of a fuller length. And Prasidh Krishna is more of a hitter, hit the deck bowler. But then definitely like these two names, Avesh Khan, Prasidh Krishna have made a steady progress among a few seasons. We saw Mohsin and Umran Malik in this season, but I would still wait for one or two more IPLs to see if their tricks are discovered or how they come back in the second season, third season, like that. But definitely, like you said, Bumrah and Siraj at the leading the attack and a few younger bowlers under them. a definite prospect is there. And of course, if once Ashwin is gone, we have a lot of left-arm spinners coming through the ranks. Interesting times ahead.
Moving on, let's take a quick look at the Australia-Sri Lanka series, where Sri Lanka seemed to be coming back. So, you know, as a country, they're undergoing a lot of stress and strain. They're going through some troubled times. Probably cricket is the way they can forget all those stress and troubled times for a few hours at least at a time. And in the 30-20, their team gave them that. So Dasun Shanaka, the captain, made a wonderful 50. Even though they were facing a very stiff target, I think the two Richardson, Jay and Kane, were sort of caught unprepared at how hard Sri Lanka came at them in the last 3 overs. And they were able to get 59 runs or something that were required in the last 3 overs with a ball to spare. Right? Purely beautiful hitting thanks to Dasun Shanaka. They got that victory. And when you look at the ODIs, I was again worried Sri Lanka would be outmatched. So in the first ODI, Glenn Maxwell scored an amazing 80 to lead them to victory Australia. So Sri Lanka batting first had made 300. This was a very strong total. And there was some delay due to rain. But did you really expect Australia to come back so hard at Sri Lanka and win the first ODI?
Like when Australia comes to the subcontinent, actually, they have a very mixed time. But they had some good performances. Like apart from Warner, everyone, Stephen Smith had a good outing. Of course, and their other lower order and Stoinis, they came out well. And Maxwell played that insane innings.
Right. So,
but sometimes, I don't know, off late, if you see, the most of Australian sides do not tour that well, the subcontinent. But yeah, but they do manage to win. But it's not like the Australia of old.
No, no. I mean, I don't know if we do them justice by comparing them to that golden generation. Yeah. Ponting, Hayden, Langer, Gilchrist, come on. I mean, that generation might never be replicated as long as we are alive, at least.
Yeah.
Right? I think they're doing all right. So they had taken the T20 series 2-1. Sri Lanka are again going through a bit of a transition, both on and off the field. In our previous episode, we had a guest from Sri Lanka who helped us understand a bit more about why these struggles are there, and there are systemic issues in Sri Lankan cricket. They have to be rooted out. Otherwise, they're going to continue growing, right? It's going to be a problem. So that aside, maybe these games provide a little bit of a break for the team. And both teams are probably also sorting out their combination. This is a T20 World Cup year after all, right? So they're probably sorting out many of those combinations. And Sri Lanka does look a little underprepared for me. But you never write Sri Lanka out. They have this talent pool. They have a new guy, Dunit Velalage. I don't know if you saw him. Another spinner. They have Mahesh Tikshana. And also this the guy who bowled for CSK. I forget him. The low trajectory arm guy who's very fast.
Matisha Patirana.
Again, amazing, amazing. So you never count Sri Lanka out, because when you look at the first ODI, they were really, they were really lambasted. Sixers and six fours by Glenn Maxwell playing an innings only like he can. And when it came to the second ODI, you see that the one guy whom I expect every time when I look at a scorecard, his name is in the scorecard, I expect him to do something special from Sri Lanka, Dhananjaya da Silva. He hasn't been up to scratch. He hasn't been up to doing much. He's sort of there or thereabouts, 34 he made in the second ODI. But then the ODI had a very interesting finish. What were your thoughts on that?
It was looking very a simple win, and they just, I don't know how they messed it up. And we should hand it to the Sri Lankans for the bowling. They really bowled tight line. And it reminded of Sri Lanka of old, of course. Yeah, or I know we shouldn't compare. But usually Sri Lankan sides are known to pile up the runs, then choke the opposition slowly. So that way. But this happened like really quickly. That 5 for 19 was very unexpected.
The victory was purely down to the fast bowling. Because the way Chamira and Karunaratna bowled, it was amazing. Because you would not expect that they would fire batsmen out in that manner. So it started with the dismissal of Glenn Maxwell. But then they still had enough balls left. All they had to do was try and hold their head, take singles and doubles, and they would win the game, right? So it was purely down to the amazing bowling efforts of Karunaratna and Chamira, and mainly Chamira, his pace, because he took out Pat Cummins' bow. But then Karunaratna kept the pressure on the other end, and even though he had gone for a runs earlier on, I thought he came back very well. When we look at the spin stocks of Australia, they had to bring in Matthew Quinman because Agar was ill, and then they also had to bring in Travis Head. How do you see Australia's spin stocks develop once somebody like Nathan Lyon hangs his boots up?
So Nathan Lyon is an almost impossible void to fill for them. The other almost Nathan Lyon who was there was Gavin Robertson. Unfortunately, his career overlapped with Vaughan.
Right.
And now he's battling with a brain tumor also. So we wish him a speedy recovery. he's one of those guys who had a very natural action. Similarly, they had Jason Kreza. So, as for some reason, I'm not seeing anyone in the vicinity. Yes, there was definitely an under 19. There was one Nivethan Radhakrishnan. I was very excited for seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you see like contrast to the women's cricket game, the spin stocks are quite dry for Australia.
I think Swepson is yet to develop into a more all-round bowler, must be said.
Yes, but again, Swepson is like, he's still facing that leg spinner's peak. When will it come? So like for Shane Warne, it came in his late 20s and that way.
Mm.
So the total control. And then there was, of course, Stuart McGill, and then there was Bryce McGinn, who just finished in the shadow of Warne and his aftermath. So really, it's difficult. Maybe if Steve Smith hadn't given up leg spin, the spin cupboard wouldn't have been sold. That is, he hasn't given up completely, but he's not looked upon as a frontline spinner. There is a problem, definitely.
There is a problem there now. But I think you would face always a gap of somebody like Nathan Lyon. You're absolutely right. You can never replace him, right?
Right.
But you hope the spinners, they train with him, they learn from him, and in a year or two, they are good enough. It's impossible to fill that word right away, but there's no ready-made replacements. But yeah, I also don't see the quality yet, but maybe they'll develop. And somebody like Nivedan, you may yet see him in a couple of years' time. And there is a guy called Sangha.
Sangha, we have seen him, Big Bash and all, but yeah.
Tanvir Sangha.
Tanvir Sangha.
Yeah, he's a wonderful bowler. Yeah. So he's also a leg break bowler. Let's say he looks like a more all-round bowler than Mitchell Swepson, if I may say that way.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen whether he's able to make that jump. So, well, some things to look forward to. All right. Now, moving on, we can take a look at some of the news from off the cricketing field. New Zealand and their COVID problems. What's going on? First, it was Michael Bracewell, along with the physio and the strength conditioning coach. Then now it's Devon Conway. And before that, it was Kane Williamson. How come it's only sweeping the New Zealand team and not the England team as well?
But the thing of the bubbles is that it can even be counterproductive. So like we've seen with Varun Chakravarti's injury, he went for a scan outside to a hospital, then came back and many other people got infected. Then similarly, as Mitch Marsh was down with illness, and the Delhi Daredevil squad attended the next match in quarantine. So definitely this bubble system which is there, right now, the current situation, you can look at not completely doing away, but at least having some more checks and balances. Like now also when they showed the close-up in the broadcast, they were saying the physiotherapy room should be sanitized repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
I was trying to read a few instructions behind the South African captain. Unfortunately, not a good day for him. So they have some systems. They have some systems in place. But many times, we don't know. Like we had the Pakistani team having that food issue, like sharing of food inside the bubble, and there was a controversy.
Right.
Then we had our restaurant gate where there was one guy who posted a photo of the bill on Twitter, then our Indians who dined outside.
Oh, God. So, I mean, who does that? I mean, no, he paid their bill, but more importantly, he took photos with them, was really close to them.
Right. So eventually, it's like the people who are playing, it is hard on them, this bubble life. There are people who have, of course, there have been pullouts from tours. But it, in the end, it comes to like how much you value your position. So like now with our Indian side, at least, you know, there are so many waiting to take your place.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, especially like if you see someone like Shreyas Iyer, he's panning out like a right-handed Suresh Raina, one short ball weakness, and people are like, they are on his, behind his thing.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely the players would be feeling the pinch even more.
Well, I hope, you know, these small things are sorted and New Zealand, at least the best thing is they have this ODI series with Netherlands going on. So there is no competitive cricket. So at least all their players can get fit as well as recover from illnesses. So there's some silver lining there for them. The next thing is William Porterfield, the former Irish captain, top order batter and mainstay. He's decided to call time on his international career. So, you know, when you look at his overall stats, it might not come across as like something earth-shattering. But for this team, he was a big, big player. He was a giant of a player because when you look at his career span, so he started in 2006 and then to retire in 2022 and having also played their inaugural tests, right? So he totally deserves the plaudits he would get back home in Ireland. We wish him all the best. Is there any specific memory for you when it comes to Porterfield?
definitely from the 2007 World Cup where they beat Pakistan.
Right.
So that is one memory where always we remember him striding out to bat, and also the reactions in the field. So these are a few memories, and always cheering up the fast bowlers. Basically, the equation between Porterfield and Trent Johnston, it was something that quite to behold.
The fast bowler,
so,
right?
Like those are the that was the first time when I saw the Ireland green shirt, and then I ordered one ICC official Ireland shirt. So it's not the team jersey, it was a round neck t-shirt.
Wonderful.
So that was the time, So this was, unfortunately, Bob Woolmer expired in that World Cup. But right. Ireland's passage in the Super 8 was something to behold. It was a great sight. And he has been at the helm of most of their prominent milestones.
Mm.
Even in the test match at Malahide,
right.
He played a decent knock. So it feels good. It's some, these are some characters which you need around the game. They may not be very famous. So, like, you know, everyone remembers all the famous ones, but we have some not so famous people who also have to be honored. So, because they are the ones who keep the flag flying in these associate nations.
Mm.
And after doing part-time jobs and not having a full-time career, being semi-professional, then playing in the counties, managing their fitness themselves.
Right.
So, all these, they deserve to be saluted.
Absolutely. Maybe he goes into coaching, or looks like he might go into commentary to initially see off. I think I've heard him on certain associate games. So we wish him all the best. Moving further, well, Ranji Trophy. So we are in the semifinals. It looks like Mumbai and MP have more or less confirmed their place in the finals. MP are yet to win. Mumbai, whenever they just decide to let the opposition have a crack at it, it looks very much like they're also going to win. Well, I mean, quite a lot of influence of Chandrakant Pandit in the way MP have played. And he's already won the trophy with two teams, Mumbai and Vidarbha. And now he's, right? He knows Mumbai team also inside out. He was formerly a coach there. So it's going to be interesting when these two teams meet in the final. But, you know, Mumbai have another record. So in the quarterfinal, they made the record with the highest difference in a win, right? 725 runs. In the second innings, while they were batting in the semi-final, they made another interesting record. So, this was made by the openers. So, apparently, this is the first recorded first wicket partnership in any first-class cricket where one of the openers made no runs. I mean, batting with Prithvi Shaw, you don't have to be surprised. All you have to do is stand, right? The runs will come.
And has the best house.
Also, clean hitting, right? You can see that. But if anything, right, in that game, UP dropped a lot of catches, I heard.
Yeah.
Interesting the way Mumbai are progressing. But a Mumbai in final is a different beast from Mumbai anywhere in the tournament, right? It's like the Mumbai team from IPL. They come up with a different attitude when it comes to how the way they play the finals. So we wish MP all the best going to the final, but it takes a certain special effort to beat Mumbai once they reach the finals of Ranji Trophy. Moving on. So we hear that the women's CPL has been planned. It's been penciled in with three teams, Barbados Royals, Guyana Amazon Warriors, and Trinbago Knight Riders. It has been planned to start in St. Kitts, the island of St. Kitts, and it'll begin on the 30th of August. So for each of these three teams, so Royals will be captained by Hayley Matthews, Guyana Amazon Warriors will be captained by Stephanie Taylor, and Deandra Dottin will captain the Trinbago Knight Riders. You know what's the fun part? There is a huge stamp of IPL here. Do you recognize where?
Correct. In Trinbago Knight Riders.
And in Barbados Royals.
Yeah.
So there's one Royals franchisee, Hampshire Royals, Rajasthan Royals, Barbados Royals. So anyway, so it's very interesting, right? So let's see how that goes. But Caribbean Cricket Board is able to take this step and hold a three-team tournament. I still can't understand why BCCI can't make it official instead of just four, exhibition games. Why not make it a proper tournament? You saw that when you did a two-game sort of a thing where morning's game was the women's game and afternoon game was the men's game. It worked so nicely. Okay. They have seen it work in Australia. So we've been complaining like for a year and a half. It's high time they started a women's IPL, Manju.
Like you can say, you know, faith can move mountains, and Ganguly and BCCI can move hordes of players across thousands of flights across the country. Mm. So why can't they do it for women?
Mm.
So ultimately, it again comes to willingness and maybe enthusiasm on that part, and or a generalized apathy in general that, you know, this is what it is. So I think I really hope that, you know, this has been one of the low points of Sourav Ganguly's tenure as BCCI president.
Mm.
So definitely, whether he makes the announcement official or not, through armchair cricket, we make our discontentment official that, you know, we don't like this. Yeah, so we don't like this move from the BCCI. Mm. And definitely, we have a great talent pool. And the reason why I am saying it is important is that we have a few people like there is someone like Devika Vaidya, a talented leg spinner, who is like now after the COVID, she is not knowing what to do, how to practice.
Right.
There's no this thing. Whereas if she had a franchise and some support system, she would have gone in the off season to train with them. And, you know, she would have sharpened her skills.
Absolutely.
So, like, we definitely need a leg spinner along with Poonam Yadav. So, there are options. And then there are some cricketers in the fringes who are doing commentary assignments, everything. Mm. They can also consider coming back to playing as a sustainable sort of a career. Mm. And it will, and the reason why I like this women's game, again, our fascination with this touch play and timing.
Right.
That is one. And skill levels, as far as spin is concerned, there is a lot more scope for skill with the extra fields woman in the circle. Mm. And there's more incentive to go up. High risk, high reward. And also the running between the wickets is tested. So definitely, and with athletes like Deandra Dotton, it's going to make for a visual spectacle only.
Absolutely.
So really, why not? Like, why not? It is now. So that is the thing. And as their men's league is now currently in its 15th year. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good time to start to give some prominence to women's cricket. Not on the sidelines of men, but treat it as a separate entity, even as a separate sport. So definitely, they should have a look at it.
Absolutely. That brings us to the last point. The amount of money IPL's broadcast rights is fetching for the next cycle, next 5-year cycle, right? So, I mean,
hashtag which was trending. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't even want to go into those numbers. They're in billions. And what a brand that has been built. A lot of credit to the people who started it have been continuing it in BCCI. Does it surprise you at all now? This is the second most valuable broadcasting sporting event in the world behind the NFL of the US.
The surprise is that within the second decade of its inception, it has grown to such a level.
Right.
So also we have to thank Ambani and co for coming out the telecom, crashing the market and getting cheaper internet to the country. So yeah, that also has a very big factor, because earlier when we used to take a 1 GB pack for a month, and I used to browse Cricinfo on a Symbian handset with my friends. So that was the only thing we could do. And if we browse too much Cricinfo, we can't browse the internet.
Right.
So that was the thing. So from there to now coming, like, GB after GB is being poured like water.
No, it's one of the cheapest cost for internet anywhere in the world. Absolutely. That is a revolution.
Exactly.
But also the...
So that explains the lakhs and millions in the broadcast, watching the broadcast.
Absolutely.
So what the danger is that they shouldn't take it for granted. Mm. So again, of late, the commentary standards, everything is not very much to write home about. Mm. So it's high time that if they are selling it for such a high price, they might as well ensure that the quality of broadcast is good enough. You know? Because we have a lot of good listeners in the country who would like to have quality content.
No, you're absolutely right. But, you know, from here, we really hope IPL as a tournament, what it's done for men's cricket, it also does for the women's cricket, and grows from strength to strength. Well, the money that's being pumped in is also used. You see, they've increased the amount of pensions that are being given to ex-players. So that's a good thing. And it's a huge community in India, as you can imagine, right? Because of the domestic structure. So that's all that is good. And we also hope they use it to nurture the cricket from ground up at the grassroots level and so on. So this is a longer discussion, but as a fan of Indian cricket, as a fan of IPL, I'm happy. Well done them. That brings us to the end of all our discussions, Manju. So thanks once again for participating in the podcast. Would you like to plug anything, any of your social media outlets?
Yeah. My Twitter is @ of the falling sweep.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And there is an alternate handle in my real name also. But we active on both. So you can just drop a message.
Absolutely, very entertaining to follow Manju on the falling sweep. I encourage all our listeners to do that. And we wish all our listeners, no matter where they may be listening from, a wonderful day. Thanks a lot, Manju, and bye-bye.
Thank you.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.